Today we will cover the king's dream that he has and about Daniel telling him what this dream was. And just as a brief review of what we've covered so far in Daniel 2, King Nebuchadnezzar had this dream and it was bothering him, and he wanted to know what it meant, so he got his wise men. But he was very smart about this. He didn't tell them what he had dreamed. He told them they were going to have to tell him what he dreamed, and then he could know that what they told him what it meant was accurate. And then finally, these wise men said, well, there's not a person on earth that can tell you what you dreamed. Only the gods that don't dwell in houses made of hands, or don't dwell in flesh, can tell you what you dreamed, which outside of the polytheistic part, this is true. Only a divine being could tell King Nebuchadnezzar what he dreamed, or through somebody, but the source had to be a divine being. So these wise men knew this. Well, whenever they told Nebuchadnezzar that there's no way they can tell, that the wise men could tell him what he dreamed, he ordered all of them to be executed. So then they started killing the wise men, and it came time, and they made their rounds, and it came to Daniel and his three friends to execute them. And Daniel said, what is this about? Why do you want to execute us? And so this captain of the guard told Daniel about this dream, and no one can do it, and so you're all going to be assassinated. And then Daniel said, I just need some time, and we will pray to God, and I'm confident that God will give us tell us what he dreamed and what it means. But we're going to need some time. He hasn't revealed anything to any of us four yet. And so they go before the king, and obviously that is granted. And so Daniel and his three friends pray to God that he will give them what the king dreamed and what it means, so that they might not perish. And with the rest of the men of Babylon is the wording. And then I'm assuming that night, but it says in a night vision, God revealed to Daniel what dream he had sent to King Nebuchadnezzar, because God was behind both the dream to Nebuchadnezzar and then this prophecy, what he had dreamed to Daniel. So Daniel was behind, God was behind both of these things, to Nebuchadnezzar and to Daniel. And then Daniel, over four verses that we ended with last week, prayed to God and was thankful for revealing this to him, and was very praiseworthy to God. And then he was, it wasn't all I, he would include we and us, which was including his three friends in this. And so Daniel wasn't taking any of the glory for himself at all, which is what we're going to contrast here with this Arioch, the captain of the guard. He's going to take all the credit to himself. And then we're going to see even here, when Daniel gets before the king, he again is telling him that this is the God of heaven, to contrast what the wise men had told him, the gods. And so we'll start in verse 24 of Daniel chapter 2. Therefore, Daniel went to Arioch, whom the king had appointed to destroy the wise men of Babylon. He went and said thus to him, do not destroy the wise men of Babylon. Take me before the king, and I will tell the king the interpretation. Then Arioch quickly brought Daniel before the king and said to him, I have found a man of the captives of Judah who will make known to the king the interpretation. So Arioch is wanting all of the praise to be on him, that he's the one that's found this, and where Daniel is the one that went to Arioch and said, okay, I have it. But Arioch is wanting all the praise for himself from the king, which is a human flaw, but this is not unique with Arioch. Nonetheless, it's much more rare what Daniel is doing and deferring and not taking any of this for credit for himself. Verse 26, the king answered and said to Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar. So this is his Babylonian name, his Chaldean name, Belteshazzar. Are you able to make known to me the dream which I have seen and its interpretation? Daniel answered in the presence of the king and said, the secret which the king has demanded, the wise men, the astrologers, the magicians, and the soothsayers cannot declare to the king. Now, there are a series of four things that were in this chapter that Kaufman brought up that I did not write down, but it's like four different things of series of four. This is one of them. The wise men, the astrologers, the soothsayers, and the magicians. And then with this dream, there are four, this image has four parts, this statue, and that Nebuchadnezzar dreamed about. So those are two of the things that there are four, but there's a whole series of four that's in this chapter that I'd never put together, but Kaufman brought that out. But none of these groups, the wise men, the astrologers, the magicians, and the soothsayers, cannot declare to the king what you dreamed or what you demand, what you dreamed and what it means. But there is a God in heaven who reveals secrets. And this is to contrast verse 11, where the wise men told King Nebuchadnezzar, it is a difficult thing that the king requests, and there is no other who can tell it to the king except the gods whose dwelling is not with flesh. So this is a contrast of how Daniel answers, there's a God in heaven who reveals the secrets, whereas these wise men, they said only gods whose dwelling is not with flesh can tell you what it means. So they knew that no human could reveal this. But here Daniel's not taking the credit. He's giving it the credit to the Creator. And he has made known to King Nebuchadnezzar what will be in the latter days. Your dream and the visions of your head upon your bed were these. As for you, O king, thoughts came to your mind while on your bed about what would come to pass after this. That means after this time. So in the future, this is what's going to happen. And he who reveals secrets has made known to you what will be. So he ends up telling, in this dream, he's telling King Nebuchadnezzar, God is the next three successive kingdoms, four, including God's kingdom, that will come after his empire. Okay, verse 30. But as for me, this secret has not been revealed to me because I have more wisdom than anyone living. Listen how humble he is. It's not because he's more wise, even though the king had just judged him and his three colleagues to be 10 times wiser, 10 times more knowledgeable than any wise men that he had ever interviewed that was in his entire kingdom. So, but he is saying that he knows this not because he's wiser than anyone living, but for our sakes who make known the interpretation to the king, in that you may know the thoughts of your heart. But it was for their sakes to save their life. God was saving their lives because otherwise they were going to be executed. And so it's not his wisdom why he could reveal this. It was to God's credit, to save these four young men, adolescents' lives. Verse 31. Now, this is the starting of the dream. You, O king, were watching, and behold, a great image. This great image, whose splendor was excellent, stood before you, and its form was awesome. The image's head was of fine gold. And then later he's going to reveal on what this means, that this is Babylon. And this head was King Nebuchadnezzar's empire. And now, here's the second part. Its chest and arms of silver. And then this was the Medo-Persian Empire that would come after the Babylonian Empire. Then, here's the third thing. Its belly and thighs of bronze, and this is the Greek Empire that would come and destroy the Medo-Persians. And they were, they used bronze a lot. That's what they were famous for. And so that's why this was brought in. And then verse 33, its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly of clay. This is the fourth kingdom, and that is representative of the Roman Empire that succeeded the Greek Empire. Okay, so it's Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, and Rome. Those are the four empires that this statue represents. Verse 34. You watched while a stone was cut out without hands, which struck the image on its feet of iron and clay and broke them into pieces. So then this stone that was cut without hands, this stone is symbolizing God's kingdom, and then God is the one that cut it out, and so he is the one that is creating this stone, and without hands is referring to God. And verse 35. Then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and gold were crushed together and became like chaff from the summer threshing floors. The wind carried them away so that no trace of them was found, and the stone that struck the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. So, all of these four kingdoms are ultimately destroyed, and the only thing left is this stone that becomes a great mountain and fills the whole earth. And this is representative of God's kingdom. And then he will, Daniel, in the explanation that I intend to cover next week, tells him in verse 44 that it's in the days of this fourth kingdom that never gets named. It's the only kingdom of the four that never gets named. He'll name Babylon and Medo-Persia and Greece, but never mention the Roman Empire by name. But it's the kingdom that came after Greek, the Greek Empire, that this would be. And in the days of those kings of this Roman Empire, God will establish a kingdom that will never be destroyed. And that is represented of this stone that was cut out without hands, and that after it destroys all of these other four kingdoms, then it becomes a great mountain and then fills the whole earth, representing God's kingdom will spread over the entire planet. Okay, are there any questions or comments on this? What I'll will plan to do is probably finish the chapter up with the explanation and then the rewarding aftermath of revealing this to the king next week. And what we'll do for our second part is read about these five kingdoms that are represented by King Nebuchadnezzar's dream that Kaufman wrote about. So any questions or comments on this?